The advantage of coming third is that the introductory slides that I put together for this talk, I think have pretty much all been covered, so I don't think I need to talk about that slide, and probably not this slide, since Ruth went into this in great detail. I just wanted to say from our state perspective a couple of examples. A traveler who arrives at the Seattle airport from a foreign country with a highly infectious disease would meet these criteria regardless of whether the specific disease was on the list of state reportable conditions. And that's sort of a way of introducing how I'm going to focus this talk. Another example would be a child found to have an elevated blood lead level as a result of exposure to a product imported from a foreign country, and you nicely referred to lead contaminated toys for me, thank you. That child would meet these criteria even if the blood lead level were between 5 and 10 micrograms per deciliter, which is meaning below the reportable level. So let's see. I think I can skim over this slide because this was all pretty much covered by Ruth. The bottom bullet, in order for CDC to be able to report outbreaks at WHO, then state agencies need to report all PX to CDC. This I'll just go over to make it clear. Ruth referred to it, and I wanted to stress the text in the resolution, the position statement. CDC should work with stakeholders, including CSD, to develop criteria and processes for states and territories to use in contacting CDC regarding public health events that may constitute a public health emergency or national concern. I'm going to come back to that. But the bottom point is, and bottom line here in terms of where we are at this instance, CDC has planned but not yet initiated the surveillance working group. So the point of my doing this talk today was to have Washington State as a case study. Are we typical of all states? Well, you've been to one state, not 50 states. Yeah, okay. We're somewhat typical in many ways, and I'll try to be as generic as I can. But to do this case study, I've got to be as specific as I can about Washington State. Our rule, like many states' rules, our rules include most of the nationally notifiable infectious diseases, or NNIDs, I will call them in subsequent slides. We have 46 of the 62. But we also have some additional state-specific conditions, about 23, I think, is the count of those. And our administrative code requires reporting. Most but not all of those are communicable diseases. And the reporting requirements apply to healthcare providers, to facilities, to labs, and to veterinarians, and others. This is an overview slide. I'll say some more about specific conditions on this list later, but this next slide is a short tangent. The NNIDs, as Ruth emphasized, are a list of conditions that states voluntarily report. The NNIDs are one component of the National Notifiable Diseases Surveillance System. And I'll talk some more about that in a moment, too. So, back to the case study. We've got broad provisions in our rules that require non-specified conditions to be reported to public health. And the wording in the broad provisions are rare diseases of public health significance and unexplained critical illness of death. The Washington State broad provisions have a bit of a problem in the sense of that such implicit reporting rules are judged to be kind of the equivalent of not reportable in the sense that reporting, especially from labs, is likely to be incomplete. Of the four specified diseases that are pre-identified as VX by WHO, Washington regulation only specifies two of those. SARS and new strain influenza would be expected to be reported to us under the rule's broad provisions, which is why I wanted to emphasize those at the very first. Washington has initiated a rule revision to add SARS and new strain influenza to its list, and if you at all ever worked with changing state regulations, you know it takes a couple of years to actually do that. In 2006, all states' rules included polio, but six did not include SARS, and two did not include smallpox. The next four slides give detail on how the nationally notifiable list differs from the state reportable list. So let's start with the NNID is not on the Washington list. This is 16 NNIDs that are not on our list, and it's too small to see from the back, so the individual items on this are not the key point. What is that if DOH learns of a case of one of these 16 conditions, then DOH will be expected to apply the WHO decision tool. And if any two of the decision tool criteria are met, then DOH should notify CDC of the occurrence. We might have a case of one of these 16 things reported because of that rare diseases of public health significance language in the rule that was on the prior slide. But these 16 are not specified in rule, nor are they on the posters that are sent to the clinicians and sent to the labs and to the hospitals for them to put on the wall. And they do that. You see them. There are three on this slide, a little hard to see, with asterisks. They are discussed in our online guidelines. But we don't know how many reporters read the online guidelines, frankly. This is the first of three slides of state reportable conditions that are not on the NNID list, so it's the flip logic. Of the 12 infectious diseases that we have that are not on the NNID list, which means that no case data is routinely sent to CDC, eight of them are former NNIDs that were rescinded by CSD. But they are judged to be still important in Washington State. For cases of these 12 conditions, DOH would be expected to apply the WHO decision tool for each and every case. If any two of the decision tool criteria are met, DOH should notify CDC of the occurrence, despite not being a nationally notifiable infectious disease. The second of three slides. These are non-infectious conditions. NNDSS, the National Notifiable Diseases Surveillance System, is a misnomer. It's currently limited only to nationally notifiable infectious diseases. DOH currently sends routine case data to CDC on those conditions that are in the yellow font, birth defects, cancer, lead, pesticide. For the other conditions, DOH would be expected to apply the WHO decision tool for each and every case. If any two of the decision tool criteria are met, then DOH should notify CDC of the occurrence. Getting a little repetitive, isn't it? Third, this is the slide for overlapping, and examples will make sense out of that, I think. Animal bites are traumatic injuries, but the primary focus is on rabies risk assessment. The trauma is secondary. Diseases of a suspected bioterrorism origin includes exposure to ricin toxin, it's not an infectious disease, et cetera, et cetera. Get the idea of overlapping there. But again, for these conditions, DOH would be expected to apply the WHO decision tool for each and every case. If any two of the decision tool criteria are met, you know what the rest of that is. Anticipated issues on this slide, I think, would be any bite from an imported animal. Another could be a reaction associated with an imported vaccine. So just to summarize here, DOH sends the nationally notifiable infectious diseases if they're in our rule. I've shown you three slides of state reportable conditions which are not nationally notifiable to NNDSS, in which case we'd be applying the tool. Showed you 16 NNIDs, which we might have reported to us, in which case we would apply the tool if we did actually receive a case report. And any other conditions would need to follow the same logic, apply the tool. So that brings me to the challenges slides, and I've got a couple. the first one is that there's radiological and chemical events in the IHR 2005, in addition to the biologicals. An event can be a release of a contaminant, even if there are zero human cases. If the event meets any two criteria, then it's a PIC. And it's unlikely that state reportable condition rules, even the broad provisions, would be adequate to cover these types of events. More challenges. States are often unable to assess the criterion related to risk of travel or trade restrictions because there's no place to go to find that. No easily accessible history. States cannot be expected to keep a record of international trade or travel restrictions, particularly those related to events in other states. And there's no reference national database of these events that we can use either. Next bullet phrases a question. Does CDC expect reports from us if only one of the remaining criteria are met? And the logic there is that, well, if two are met, then CDC would have to report it to WHO, but states can't know about one of them. So does that mean we have to report anything if just one criterion is met? If that's the case, then we'll suppose the case is unusual, but the public health impact is not serious. Or conversely, suppose the public impact is serious, but it's not unusual or unexpected. It's a bit of a conundrum. So that returns me to the CDC-CSD Surveillance Working Group for IHR implementation, which needs to be convened. We need to work out processes which are best for states and territories. This is all an unfunded mandate from the state perspective at this time, but states are glad to comply if we can figure out what to do. And I want to close with the final challenge, and that's the World Health Assembly called for evaluation in Article 54 of the IHR 2005, and Kamel referred to that. One of the focus is on the evaluation of the decision tool itself, and I think that's an important piece. But the key here that I want to stress is that I think the opportunity exists to conduct a prospective evaluation of this new surveillance policies procedures. It leaves us with some uncertainties. One is that WHO resources may constrain the scope of that evaluation. Another is that it's not clear to me whether it's better to have an internal or an external evaluation. And then thirdly, there's the question of the evaluation design. There's two frameworks for evaluation on this slide. Both, I think, have the potential for being useful. WHO in 2006 published a guide to monitoring and evaluation. Its focus was on communicable disease surveillance and response systems. There is no companion document yet for non-infectious conditions. Thank you very much.